Hi, I'm Wendy.
I'm Lori.
And we are small business owners in Northwest Ohio. We thought we'd start a podcast. Welcome to
Hot Topics,
Cool Friends.
All right, well, welcome to Hot Topics, Cool Friends. And today we have Nicole Corey here.
Hello.
Hi, Nicole. I'm really excited to ask you a bunch of questions.
Shoot.
You're one of my, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I talk about you a lot to people. I'm very proud to know you.
Aw, thank you.
Oh, that's so sweet.
I know, I'm like tearing up.
That kind of got me teary.
I'm like, stop. It might be a hot flash. I don't know. It's both. No, but honestly. So I think you probably, I know you've been asked this many, many, many times, but you're sort of a superhero, you know, like you are a judge by day and then a rock star at night. How, okay, let's just start real quickly.
Sure.
I know you've been playing music since you were little, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who inspired you? How did that start?
That's an interesting question because I grew up, my dad was in a band, from the time I was, before I was born, until this day, he still plays music. So I grew up watching his band practice in my basement. And I remember we used to have these like boxes up and me and my friends would be dancing behind, you know, the boxes when you're a kid, you know, four or five, mm-hmm. 6 years old. Started playing the piano when I was four. And so my dad's whole side of the family, both sides of the family are extremely musical. Everybody's got ridiculously good voices. It's kind of annoying. You come to our house for Christmas, you don't sing Jingle Bells, you sing an 8-part Hallelujah chorus and it sounds good. I mean,
really?
That's just the way that it goes. My mom's whole side of the family played the piano, started the piano when I was very young. I actually didn't pick up the guitar till I was 30. That's something I'm very angry at my father for because he's a very good guitar player. It's like, why didn't you teach me when I was young? I could have been I could have been Megan Leslie, you know?
Yeah.
I could have been a great female guitar player in Toledo. So in terms of what inspired me, it just was kind of, I was born into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of my blood. It's part of my being. I grew up listening to Led Zeppelin and Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix. So those are my, you know, my trilogy of greatness right there.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really start singing, not by choice, but singing myself till I was in law school. And that was because I was the piano player. So I was always the accompanist. So for the choirs and for the Rebel Airs and show choirs and all of those things. And for my sister, who was a great singer, I was always the piano player. So I was always very stifled as a vocalist. I was in the choirs, but it was like, oh, well, you need to be the accompanist.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people really knew I had the voice that I had until I was in my early 20s. And then it was like, oh, wow, okay, you can sing. So, okay, well, I'm like, yeah, I always knew I could sing. You guys kind of.
So what college did you go to?
I went to Hillsdale College for undergrad. I went to University of Toledo for law school.
Good. Yeah. Go Rockets,
yeah.
Right.
Huh.
So you're playing out the bars. Yeah.
Did it bother you that, I mean, because I played here and there, but not really great at an instrument. So as a vocalist, mm-hmm. that's kind of like, I just feel like there's a different passion between a singer
that
sings and someone 100%. That plays. So 100%. How did you like sit in the background like that and not say, wait a minute, give me that microphone. I want to sing.
Like, because I kind of grew up. I don't know how to say it. I was a very good girl. I did what I was supposed to do. I grew up, you know, the oldest of four girls. I was the person that had to set the example. And you don't want to screw that up. So I'm a rule follower. So you're told you're the best piano player. You need to play the piano. You sit down, you play the piano.
Mm-hmm.
And to be completely honest, I mean, you know, obviously you guys have heard me sing. I have a unique voice. Mm-hmm. I don't sound like a lot of people around town. And so that part of my voice came later, you know, in my 20s. When I was in high school, I was just a second soprano who couldn't hit the really high notes, but, you know, and always good with harmonies and those kinds of things. And so that was kind of okay for me to do.
Mm-hmm.
But when I discovered I had the, as my husband would say, whiskey tenor voice that I have, I was like, okay, now it's, you know. I haven't played the piano. The unfortunate thing is I haven't played the piano in years, and I was very good. I was a classically trained piano player. I sit down now and try to fumble around every now and then, but when I started playing the guitar, I concentrated so much on learning how to do that the piano kind of went by the wayside,
Did you teach yourself the guitar? Did your dad finally?
No, I did. I actually, my guitar player, one of my first guitar players, Mick Mason, who's just a genius guitar player, and he's also a teacher, I knew three chords, G, C, and D, just like everybody knows. And he was able to say, okay, you know how to play the piano. I'm going to show you. So I would take a guitar with me to gigs. And when I knew there was a G, C, or D, I'd play it. And then I'd watch him. Mm-hmm. And then I learned from there. And then all of a sudden, one day, it just kind of clicks because you do have the musical background of being a piano player. Yeah. You know, and again, I mean, my music theory is terrible now. But back then, I knew everything, you know. Yeah. So it made sense. What I really want to do. I mean, I'm a rhythm guitar player. You know, I would love to delve into teaching myself or to get somebody to help me actually learn, you know, notes better and practice that. But life is busy.
Yeah, so. A little bit. Yeah, speaking of that. So how did the law piece come into what? How old were you? Like,
again.
You know, I think I'll go to law school.
Again, rule follower. No, I'm one of those people that if I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And that's just the truth. So I grew up thinking I was going to be a professional dancer. That's what I grew up thinking. It was eighth grade, and we had to go take a trip to the University of Toledo to follow, you know, students around, mm-hmm. look at college life, see what that's all about. And my dad was like, you can't be a dancer and grow up, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I guess I'll be a lawyer. Here we are.
Let's just go right there.
Here we are, you know, 30 years later, and, you know, I'm a judge.
You're very committed.
I am very committed to what I say I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Now, that being said, I was a very good lawyer. I found my passion in criminal defense. I'm a very analytical thinker, which is a lost art on kids these days. Mm-hmm. I'm obviously good at arguing with people, but I'm good at seeing all sides of the issue. And that's what you have to do. I mean, and especially as a judge, that's what you have to do. So I'm not saying I just did it because I said I was going to do it, but I learned that I loved it. I found my niche. It was lucky because I had my own practice. So I was able to do a bunch of different things. I would do some contracts for friends. I did entertainment law for several national recording artists. I'll do a lot of trademark stuff. I did trust and estates. Mm-hmm. So I was able to dabble in everything, but 95% of my practice was all criminal defense.
Yeah.
So.
But the less fortunate.
And it's exciting. Yeah. I mean, I tell people all the time, friends of mine that, you know, especially going through divorces, I'm like, I would rather represent a murderer than a divorce any day of the week. It's not, it's awful.
Like, I hear a lot of people say that.
Oh, I mean, you know, at least there's something about, especially when you believe in your client's innocence, there's something about fighting for that really, and I think that people, look, the justice system gets a really bad rap because people don't understand it. And I appreciate they don't understand it, but it gets a really bad rap. The first thing you'll see on any comment on any news station or any article about somebody being out of jail and then committing a crime, the first thing you see is, oh, the justice system failed. Oh, why'd that judge? He never should have been let out on a bond. It's like, go read the Constitution.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You have to be. Like, people don't understand those things. They also don't understand things like, if you were accused of committing a crime and you were innocent or didn't believe that you know, you would not be saying the same things that you're saying on these comments.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you have to remember that. You have to try to go back. And that's a very hard job because you are constantly being ridiculed because people don't understand. Mm-hmm. If they understood and you went through with them, they also don't understand that we don't have jail space to just put everybody in jail. Yeah. It's cost money, which is taxpayer dollars, you know? Mm-hmm. So the people don't understand how it works. So it's a very, very difficult job to be constantly in the public eye and constantly ridiculed and constantly hated by half the people and loved by half the people. It's a hard job. There's really no in the middle.
So speaking of that, so when you're out, is there a certain story that has, especially early on when you just became a judge, because it was 2017, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're in a rock band and it's got to be a lot of the same crowd.
It is.
So we were talking about that today because Wendy was like, well, it might be different. I'm like, her friends right in front of her like, yeah.
Well, and you know, the hard thing is, and people think, well, I know her. And it's like, you're one of 5,000 Facebook friends that I don't know who you are, but whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it comes down to, do you know anything about the case in front of you? Not do you know the person.
Yeah.
Now, if it was my husband, I would be like, you know, I am not presiding over this case.
Sure.
If it's like, I know this person from the music community and he got a speeding ticket, the first thing I say is, I know this person from the music community. I don't know anything about this case. Does anybody care if I proceed with this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are stories. Segue. First time I played at the Cock and Bull downtown Toledo after I was sworn in. And we used to, I mean, my stage show has changed dramatically from the way that it used to be. First of all, I'm old now, but I'm also on the bench, and, you know, there's things that you don't do anymore. And we used to sing a certain song by Buck Cherry, and I'm sure everybody knows what song it is. And I'm like, I freaked out. I was like, what am I going to do? I can't sing this. I can't do it. Luckily, Kyle White had walked in, and I was like, please sing this song. This bachelor party, and they want this song, and I feel so bad. I was like having a panic attack about it. I don't feel that way anymore, but I also don't sing. It's also a terrible song.
It's kind of a terrible
song.
But,
you know, or you're playing a gig and there's a defendant that works at the same place that you're playing at. And they're like, oh. And then you sit there and you say to yourself, well, I'm certainly not having a drink tonight because I know that's going to get thrown in my face. Just little things like that. So it hasn't really thrust itself. I mean, yes, there are people who will always make those comments and say things, and the haters are going to hate. It's a hard thing to run a political campaign if you really want to find out how tough your skin is, because it is not a fun experience.
No, it's not.
It's awful.
I'd be crying I could never.
It's awful. You do a lot of things in private to get out that frustration, but it is a terrible way to get a job. Mm-hmm. It's awful.
Yeah.
I wouldn't recommend it for anybody.
No.
That being said, serve your community.
And serving your community. So let's quickly touch on Acoustics for Autism.
Sure.
You know, like, it's my favorite time of the year.
It is.
I really love it. Every time I look so excited. I'm so excited for it. And all the musicians giving back so much of their, you know.
Well, they always do.
They always do.
They always do. They're always the first people that get hit up whenever there's a fundraiser for anything. Mm-hmm. You always feel like you have to have music, and the musicians are always the first people. But Acoustics is crazy. You know, it started off as an idea at a bar with a name. And then I was able to tie that into a personal experience with a friend. And here we are 17 years later. I mean, if you look at where it started at the Village Idiot and Mommy, and, you know, it started there with, I go back and forth because I got to find the original list. It was either 12 or 17 bands. I'm going to go with 17. I think it was closer to 12, though. And now we're at 95 bands and 8 stages. And we just surpassed the $1 million mark of how much money we've distributed in 17 years. And that's a huge number.
That is a huge number
of
and
money.
What I like about it is it goes to specifically like the kid, it gives them something to do, events, like what exactly?
So we very clearly say we are not a provider. We are not a medical professional. And every kid that's on the spectrum is different. You find what fits for your child and what's helping your child. And we will help with the out-of-pocket expenses, the stuff that isn't covered by insurance. And so it's been everything from ABA therapy to a hyperbaric chamber to certain specialty foods to I get Amazon wish lists all the time for sensory products, summer camps. I mean, we just funded like 20 kids for a summer camp in the area. Agility Angels, the dogs. The dogs, the horseback riding lessons, karate lessons, dance lessons, music lessons. So that's where the money goes. And so it's really been all over the board. And if you look on our page, you'll see there's a Scholarship Hall of Fame. And every single kid is listed with their picture and where they use their money. So you get a chance to see, like, all the different things
it's
that we've
so
funded
touching.
Over
we,
the
we
last
wa-
years.
Actually, Gary was watching this morning, and I said, is that Project I Am? And he's like, yeah. And we sat there and watched, and the videos are so touching because it's truly – I'm not bashing other fundraisers, but you don't really see where the money goes.
No, you don't.
Yeah. You don't. And with Project I Am, you see.
Yeah.
And you see, I'm going to start crying, but you see how it touches all these families.
Yeah. Well, and that was, you know, to be honest, back to, you know, when I say I'm going to do something, I do it. Mm-hmm. That's how the whole thing started. I mean, it started because I was really angry that my friend who was affected by autism in 2007 raised a bunch of money for an organization and never benefited their child at all. Now, they would argue, well, it benefited their child because, well, we got a new conference room for the provider where they could do their work better. Okay, but realistically, if these people can't afford to go there, then what does it matter? Mm-hmm. So it made me angry. And I said, I'm going to do something about it. That's something I said to you earlier. I don't talk about what makes me mad. I do something to fix it. I'm just a doer. And that's try to make things better. Try to leave the world better from everything that you touch and everything that you do. And if you can do that, And if everybody can do that, then the world would be a better place.
100%.
You know, but, and mm-hmm. I get that not everybody has a crazy organized ADD mind like I do that can do 50 things at once. Mm-hmm. And I can, and it's crazy, but I can. That's me. That's who I am. That's my personality. That's where my energy comes from. People are always like, what do you mean you don't drink coffee? I'm like, I don't drink coffee. I don't do drugs, you know, obviously. But I just have this natural energy. It's been like this since I was a child. Mm-hmm. And I've found a way to focus that on a project, and then that's how I do what I do. And it takes a lot. That event is a lot of work, and it's a 365-day-a-year job. And, you know, for the event, there are tons of really reliable volunteers that help me put that event on. But when it comes to the day-to-day running of the charity, that's me. Mm-hmm. When it comes to, you know, making sure everything's done and the bills are being paid and the taxes are being filed and the kids are, everything is being done, the websites are being done, everything's being done. That's me. And it's a lot of work, especially right now when you're getting, especially after the success of Acoustics. I mean, we've gotten so many applications since March. We've blown through the $280,000 that we've raised. We blew through it in 2 months, giving out that many scholarships. I mean, it's a good thing.
That's fabulous.
But it's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. You probably, the minute it stops, you got to start 100%. Planning it right away. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I know we have Scott here with us too today. So, you know, maybe Scott, can you say something about your part in it, all of it? Because we see your face all over media. And I just think that you guys are such a great team together.
Thank you. No, yeah. My role in this mm-hmm. has always been enthusiastically embraced by the team that had worked with Nicole for years before I showed up to keep her calm. And to so if you talk to Lenny and Brian, they love me because you talk about passion. They would find themselves on the receiving end of the passion when things wouldn't go right. And so they I've helped.
I'm the Nicole Whisperer.
And that was we hit it off as friends, you know, long before we became romantically involved.
So that's how did you guys meet?
Through music. I think, you know, I always want to get her in a band because I loved her voice. Mm-hmm. I heard it. And I had told her I was playing like part-time as a fill-in drummer for several bands. Like Distant Cousins were between drummers at that point. That was when they first started. Mm-hmm. The Homewreckers, I was starting a couple other projects. But I wanted to get in a band at that time that would be sustainable for me and what I wanted to do. And she would have been the perfect singer. So mm-hmm. I was bugging her for years to let me be her drummer, you mm-hmm. know, and we'll build a band around it. And it just it didn't work out that way until they found it kind of grew out of an acoustic act. They just had an opportunity to glom onto another band. Her and Mick did, mm-hmm. and her original guitar player, our original guitar player. So, yeah, that's how it started. I always wanted to be in a band with her. We became friends. We, you know, I supported the charity. I was able to get our company at the time to work with the charity and become a large sponsor early on for one of the events that wasn't Acoustics. And we just became friends, and then I bugged her enough that she finally went on a date with
How many times did you have to bug her? Like,
it was a lot. She had no romantic interest in me at all. We would go to, so I had, you know, I was divorced and going through or in the process of it over many years, I would go to work functions often, you know, and you always have to take a date. And I didn't have a lot of respectable people mm-hmm. that would go out on a date with me, mm-hmm. you know, that would be, you know, someone that you'd be proud to bring to one of those events.
Yeah.
She would come as my buddy and we would just have so much fun. And I think, you know, eventually it just wore on her.
It wore on her, but it's always good to be friends first. Like that, you know, don't you think that's a great way to start? Most, I tell my kids that.
It works for us because we have so much trust. I trust her with my life, and she would say the same thing. Mm-hmm. I think that we had that foundation mm-hmm. before, you know, before anything else.
That's awesome. I have one question for Nicole that someone gave me. They want me to ask you. Let's see here. You're at a karaoke bar, and a celebrity walks in. Who is it, and what song would you choose for an impromptu duet?
Dead or Alive.
Oh, I
I think I'm.
Wow. That was like sure. Really quick.
Why is your brain at the top?
I don't know.
Let's go with Alive.
Alive. Robert Plant.
Yeah.
I thought she meant.
What did you think, Laurie?
Never mind. Nothing. Just forget it. I thought she meant the song. Dead or Alive.
Oh.
Oh.
It would not be Bon Jovi.
No.
I was like, oh, wow.
Okay. That's awesome.
No. It would be Robert Plant. What song would I sing? Oh, God. I hate singing karaoke songs. Probably Janis. Probably mm-hmm. Peace of My Heart. Mm-hmm. Dead, it would be Jimmy. I love Jimi Hendrix. It makes me sad that he died at the age he died mm-hmm. because I can't imagine what would our music would be like if he was still around. Mm-hmm. I love him. Mm-hmm. And probably the same song, yeah. Yeah, because him and Janis were buddies. So.
Duet, yeah, they were.
Though. Huh?
It was supposed to be a duet.
Well, she could sing with Robert Plant.
Oh, is it supposed to be a duet?
That's what the question, yeah.
Oh, a duet. Anyway. I didn't listen to it.
That's okay.
God, what duets are, I guess Battle of Evermore is the only Led Zeppelin duet, right? But that's a terrible girl song. I don't know.
See, you could say whatever. I wouldn't know.
We'll just sing. I would sing Kashmir with Robert Plant.
Nice.
That's what I would sing with him. Mm-hmm. And I would sing Angel with Jimmy.
I like that.
Yeah.
Maybe we can make that happen with that.
There you go. Let's get it done.
You know how they brought Elvis back and he sang with.
Oh, the hologram?
Yeah. Get a hologram going. Laura, you going to ask her the popular question that we ask all our guests?
Oh, yeah.
I know. It's such a it's such a funny listen, question.
You know what? They always come up with a really good answer. So, Nicole, why are you our cool friend?
Okay.
Or what makes you so cool? Because you have a lot of friends, you know. Like, why do you think you're cool? Or why do other people think you're cool?
It's like five questions.
I can tell you why other people think I'm cool, because I happen to get a quote from another mm-hmm. person mm-hmm. that I messaged to Wendy. Because I said, why do you think I'm cool sitting next to a very good friend? I would say it's because I'm 100% authentically me. There is nothing fake about me. There is nothing dishonest about me. I am extremely loyal. And again, I do what I say. As a friend, I'm the organizer and the mama bear and the person who's always making sure things are happening, making sure people's birthdays are celebrated, making sure that even though we might fall off the grid for months at a time, we all come back together no matter what it's about. I don't know. I mean, yeah, it's cool that I'm a judge and I play in a rock band. That's really cool. But when you take all of that stuff that I think I have to offer the world and the community, it's a really cool mix of stuff. And it's 100% real and just me. And that's why I'd say. And I'm Scott Hayes' wife. So
there you go.
I mean,
cool.
He looks really good in blue. Yes. And I will, when we air this, I'll attach the quote from Jay.
Yeah.
Because that was really nice.
Yeah, it was.
Really beautiful. But
are you a Leo?
Yeah.
I am.
Oh, yes, me too.
I
was going to ask her that.
Well, I'm glad you did it because you remind me of Wendy a lot.
July 27th.
August 4th.
7/27/77. I was due on August 4th.
Were you?
No, August 1st. Never mind. Forget that.
66 here, but whatever. Yeah. It's all a blur.
7/27/77.
Yeah. I was going to ask you if you were, because, you know, we just get in our brains. It's a Leo thing.
It is totally a thing.
I'm going to do it. 100%. I'm going to take in charge of it. Yeah.
Yeah, and you guys can't get along with that many people. But Sagittarians, you can.
You think? I think Leo's
along with everybody, but Sagittarians let you do what we do.
This is true.
And they don't get snarkety about it. Mm-hmm. They're like, that's them.
Snarkety.
They
want to use that word.
They want to be in charge. And it's true, great because you do. Mm-hmm. Like, I always say that. If I need something done, I'm going to give it to Wendy. Now I know I can give it to Nicole. I'm just going
to
add some more to her plate.
There you go.
I'm teasing, but
anytime.
You guys get stuff done. That's good.
What about Virgos in this? How does a Virgo and a Leo get along?
Really well.
I
know that from the past.
I can tell you Aquarians aren't my friends usually.
Sagittarians aren't?
Aquarians.
Aquarians.
Oh, Aquarians.
Yeah.
I dated a couple Aquarians.
We should do a whole podcast.
But you
on
love
that.
Sagittarian girls, right?
My mother is a Sagittarius.
See?
Okay. So will you come back?
Always.
Awesome.
Always.
Awesome. It was really fun talking to you and learning those things I didn't know.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I didn't know a lot of that. That's mm-hmm. very
sweet. Well, I appreciate you guys having us on.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Thank you for joining us today on Hot Topics Cool Friends. I'm Lori.
And I'm Wendy.
We would like to give a special thanks to
Chris Pfeiffer, our executive producer, and
Gary Wagner, who wrote and produced our music.
If you guys have any questions or comments and you want to listen to more of these wonderful episodes, head on over to WGTE.org/coolfriends or anywhere you stream your podcast.
And remember
to thank your local business owner
and go out and hear a local musician.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.